call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 10:32 a.m. on Tuesday, April 2nd. And we have with us today Representative Josephson, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Representative Staff, Representative Edgman, Representative Flom, Representative Ortiz, Representative Kronk, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Foster, myself, Representative Johnson. We have, we'll continue with amendments today with the operating and mental health budgets. We ended today, yesterday, on amendment number 58. At some point, we'll take up the amendments that were rolled yesterday, but for now, we're going to go ahead and continue on with amendment number 58. And 58 is, will be offered by Representative Josephson.
Madam Chair, I think I noted last night, and I'll make a motion again, that 58 be given consideration after 59. And I think that the logic of that is self-explanatory. My amendment is identical to, well, it's almost identical, except that it is a one-time increment. And I think that it makes sense for the committee to consider amendment 59 first.
So I hear what you're saying, but I mean, I don't want to just start into rearranging amendments here. This is the not going to be withdrawn. This is the one-time increment.
Yes.
And then the other, the 59 is going to go into the base.
Brief it easy.
Yeah.
We're still the record.
Yeah, brief it easy. All right, we are on amendment number 59, Representative Josephson.
I think we're actually on amendment 58, and I will not be offering it at this time.
Okay, very good. We are now on amendment number 59, offered by Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I move to adopt amendment 59.
Yeah.
There is an objection. Would you like to speak to your amendment?
Yes, thank you. This amendment provides a $15 million increment for the child care grant program being directed through the child care program office. This money can be spent on wages or operations expenses that are reimbursed, but they have to be pre-approved by the state. This is already a structure we have in place. We have heard from programs all over the state that this boost in funding will be the difference between keeping their doors open or closing them, and will offer a huge incentive to increase capacity, and hire more teachers, and boost wages to retain quality educators. Child care centers in Dillingham and Ketchikan closed within the last couple of weeks, in part due to lack of support. Ketchikan has lost about half of its programs. You can see next to you is a support letter with signatures from Anchorage, Nome, Dillingham, Ketchikan. More than 50 Alaskans have testified during our testimonial period over the budget in support of this funding in the operating budget. And the amendment does go to the base, and I want to be clear on why that is. As we know, with many things related to staffing, adding and removing one-time funding year after year makes it harder for childcare facilities to pass on the benefits of these increases due to actual providers. What the people, the families, and communities that provide these services, and the reason is they don't want to increase compensation for providers and then cut them the very next year. It makes it very difficult to recruit. It makes it very difficult to retain. This is a known piece that we must consider as we're thinking about how we as a state are going to show that child care is something that we now want to put front center to hold up our economy, to hold up our families, to keep families from leaving the state. This amendment supports and benefits whole communities. Children get safe, comfortable childcare. Childcare providers should be able to access meaningful increases in compensation for the important services they provide. The average childcare salary is roughly less than $15 statewide. We all know that. That's not a surprise to us. Yet in Juneau, where they have made substantial investments, it's now at $18 average. Again, $18 is the average salary in Juneau for our precious children to be cared for safely. In the rest of the state, it's less than $15. Not many of us can live off of that. This amendment helps to take care of that to some degree. Child care providers should be able to access meaningful increases in compensation for the important services they provide. Parents get to feel trust that their children will be well provided for while they are away at work, and both parents are able to work if that family's choice or needs is present. And communities get more solvent. The small businesses are able to take care of themselves, and they will have more workforces in their workforce. This is a really important workforce amendment. The funding is being added to the base via an increment because Alaska small business owners need predictability in how they build their budgets and their businesses. We've heard from chamber after chamber after chamber and the Alaska Chamber at large, knowing that workforce development equals child care. The amendment also provides intent language regarding the intended target of the funding, the child care providers themselves. By providing clear intent language, we empower the state of Alaska employees to structure and offer these grants in such a way as to ensure they support providers doing their work. In addition, this amendment will amplify the benefit of HB 89. This is a complementary amendment, as the increase in eligibility needs embedded in HB 89, it will work best when paired with direct operating grants to child care businesses. Without this additional direct support, Alaska may see child care providers closing their doors or limiting the number of child care slots available to families. And a $13.9 billion budget, what this group of folks, of child care providers, is asking for is $15 million. If we can fund other things that we know are important, like our K-12 students, 128,000 students, they're getting over $1 billion. We're looking at adding an additional 15, and they are already at less than 100 million for our 50,000 children from 0 to 5. And I also wanted to add that in Juneau, the investment that was made here for 4% of the population is $2.1 million. And that is, again, $2.1 million, and we have 4% of the population here, and there is no longer any wait list in Juneau. Juneau now is paying its providers $18 an hour. So I think we have a model. They solved it within 4 years. And with this amendment and with HB 89, which is an important structural piece once it gets in place, we will be on a pathway to solving this problem and welcoming all working families. I urge your support.
All right. Thank you, Representative Galvin. Any further comments? Representative Colom.
Yeah, I'd like to move a conceptual amendment.
All right. We have a conceptual amendment. Would you like to tell us what that is?
Yeah, I'd like to change the amount to $7.5 million and make it a one-time increment.
All right. $7.5 million and it changes to a one-time increment.
Yeah. Can I speak to it?
I'll object for the purposes of discussion.
Thank you very much.
So I think everybody knows I've been on the child care task force, and so I'm very aware of all the issues and put forward a bill on top of it. So we have a couple of amendments around child care, and I will just kind of express my view on things, and not everybody shares this view, but these big block child care block grants have not been effective in keeping child care centers open. We saw that with COVID. They got $95 million for child care during COVID. We still lost half the child care centers, which is why I put a bill together that kind of that targets certain things that I think will uplift the industry. So the tax exemptions and the subsidy rate for families to use are very targeted in how to provide child care. I've dealt with or seen a lot of what's going on with child care grants. You think they're going to wages, but I've gone to a lot of child care centers, and they're not always going to wages. They're going to fix roofs, and they're paying for equipment, buying vans, and that's all good stuff. That's, you know, they're keeping their business afloat. But I said on the task force, I do not support subsidized wages. I think we need to streamline the process of opening a child care center, and they need to be able to stand on their own. And this is not helping. The reason why I'm supporting the 7.5 this year in a one-time increment is because I think with HB 89 and some other initiatives from the department happening, we will start seeing improvements in the child care industry. And I struggle with the department and with the nonprofit that give these grants out. It takes them a year to get these grants out. It's too long. They sit on the money for too long, not on purpose, but just for red tape. It doesn't go out to child care centers. The one, the 7.5 that we approved last year is just now going out. It takes them too long to get out. They need to be more efficient, more targeted. And so that's why I'm really concerned about putting it in the base. I don't want them relying on that. I want them to be able to run their businesses without the government giving their people wages. So that is why I moved the amendment for the one time and why it's 7.5 to just keep it consistent for a year as these changes are being made and then be able to revisit it next year to see what needs to be done.
Thank you. Does anyone else like to speak to the amendment? Representative Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will be voting no on the amendment, not because I don't support child care, but much to the opposite, which is I would rather see the full $15 million in the base. My folks back home, I think, certainly support that. But you know, you look at the number of groups that are in this letter that we received here, and this is a statewide issue, and I just feel that $15 million will make more of an impact versus 7.5. So I'll be supporting the underlying amendment, but not the conceptual amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Foster. Anyone else like to speak to? I do want to make note we've been joined by Representative Sumner. Representative Staff?
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. So we have a pretty good bill that basically incentivizes companies to, it creates a very generous tax incentive to be able to develop more childcare facilities. Employees of companies have access, or at least they should have access, in my opinion, if their employers offer it, to Section 125 dependent care benefits that allows them to put aside up to $5,500 out of their paycheck pre-tax to pay for child care benefits. But again, fundamentally, artificial subsidies do not fix structural deficiencies, right? When the state is the maker of this conceptual amendment, mentioned there was $95 million in COVID money and still half the child care facilities closed, right? So you can subsidize things. You can do that for a while. But ultimately, like anything else, the problem that you have is you have a high rate of inflation. Wages for most folks haven't caught up in this inflationary period. When wages do catch up, people will have more disposable income to be able to pay for childcare as they did prior to the pandemic. So if we think that we can add a bunch of money into the base to mask the symptoms of the underlying problem, I just think that's fundamentally bad policy, so I'm not going to support the conceptual amendment, nor am I going to support the underlying amendment. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Staff. Representative Josephson.
Well, I saw on the calendar, I think even later this week, we're taking up Cook Inlet royalty reform, and I just think about that because we've just been told that subsidies don't fix underlying problems. So we'll see whether that stands true later in the week.
Going to say the same thing.
All right. I'm waiting to hear further debate. I'm not sure how I'm going to vote on the amended amendment proposal. What I know is that North Dakota is spending $66 million. I think their population is just under 1 million people. We're spending, of course, much less than that. Oklahoma and Idaho have 2 to 4 times our population, but have 20 times our investment in child care. And I'm also told that CURSA, ARPA, and CARES dollars are expected to be gone by August of this coming summer. So I'm concerned that while I appreciate the amended amendment proposal, it's under-resourcing things. The other thing is I see here, and Representative Colomb knows far more about this than I do, but I did take note that on page 7 of the Governor's Task Force report, it says create a sustainable state funded wage subsidy for licensed care professionals to support a living wage. It's footnoted, footnote 2, the inclusion of state-funded, quote-unquote, was approved by the majority of the task force. Okay. Now, one could say, yeah, but general fund dollars are not sustainable. Well, except we use them. We spend $4 billion of general fund dollars per year. It may be just a hair under that. We use them for all sorts of purposes. Snow removal, our salaries, teacher salaries, on and on and on. So they seem to sustain those things. Is it ideal? Perhaps not. But I would love to hear some more debate, and I encourage my colleagues to join in that debate.
Representative Edgeman.
I'm going to support the conceptual amendment. And the reason I'm going to do so, I agree, I view it as being in conjunction with the bill that Representative Columbus put forward, House Bill 89, if I remember right. I also know from my discussions, not just around this table, but from outside the Capitol building, with the Hunt Institute and with child care providers, with the chambers, various chambers that have been in my office, that the need to increase child care in Alaska is past the point of being an urgent issue. It's an issue that's here and now. It's also an economic development issue, among other things, and it's also an issue that's in transition. We're in the process of restructuring. But one-time money in the budget this go-around helps us kind of move toward the task force, the governor's task force, that hasn't completed its report yet, I believe, but it's sort of given us an initial sort of report on where things stood when we had the staff here earlier in the session. But this is an issue I hope in a couple years we can look back on and say that we have done our part, whether it's getting the private sector more involved somehow and getting the market forces into play that allow these child care providers who do extremely valuable work but to be paid on par with those that get a job at Walmart and other retail institutions around the states. So I see this as a first step in a journey that we're not quite there yet, and it's going to cost us a little money for sure. But I don't know that the underlying amendment would get the support around the table, so therefore I'm going to support the conceptual amendment.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I just want to enter the conversation with a question, either for the sponsor of the sponsor of this particular amendment that we're talking about now, or the member from Fairbanks. Both of you referenced how government support for child care centers didn't work during COVID as a reason why we shouldn't support this particular underlying amendment. I'm naive. It seems to me, and I'm asking, truly this is a question. Didn't COVID have something to do with the fact that people weren't taking their kids to child care centers because of their nervousness about COVID? And that had a lot more to do with centers failing than whether there was government support or not government support. That's truly a question.
Anyone else? Can anyone else around the table that for further discussion? We'll have the maker of the amendment will have an opportunity to answer that question and wrap up. Thank you. Representative Hannon.
Madam Chair, could I have a brief at ease?
Brief at ease. House Finance back on the record. So we were on Representative Hannon, who called the at ease, but I'm not sure if he finished speaking.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am a reluctant yes on the conceptual amendment, and at the risk of debating child care ad nauseum, I don't think $7.5 million as one-time money is enough, but I'm also a pragmatist and doing a nose count. I think it's what we can get. So I'm going to be a reluctant yes for the conceptual amendment and then the underlying amendment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hannon. Anyone else who would like to speak to the conceptual amendment? Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do want to speak to it. I think I heard some thoughts around COVID times, and I want to make sure to put on record that there is a lot of research around why daycares and actually schools also lost enrollment. That is, so it makes it a very difficult data set to work with to say that the federal funds caused daycare centers to close. I don't think that any researcher would say that that is true. I do think it's true that they were one-time funds. And as we hear from many places, nonprofits and certainly departments and agencies, when it is grant funding, particularly 1 year, it's very difficult to recruit or retain employees for that. And so many of those businesses were forced to not use it accordingly. And I think that's important to say because while we are very pleased to see that there is some will within this committee to support childcare, it's maybe that we have to take baby steps to get there. And I'm saddened that this is a smaller step than I think the state needs. But I will also be a reluctant yes to this particular amendment because I think it gets us to the support that will be politically viable. And it's important that we look at this as a positive move in the right direction for children. So thank you.
Representative Josephson, I'm not certain who has spoken to the underlying amendment. I know you've spoken to the amendment, but go ahead, Representative Josephson.
Could I inquire of Mr. Painter very, very quickly about the governor's December 15th and February 15th budgets?
Of course.
And what the governor's wish was on this topic.
Representative Josephson has requested that we hear from Ledge Finance. Mr. Painter, if you would, come forward and place yourself on the record. I think you may have heard the question. If you haven't, we can have it repeated.
Thank you. For the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division. So, there was a $7.5 million one-time general fund item in the FY24 budget that was removed and adjusted based on the governor not put that back, if that was the question.
Follow.
Representative Josephson.
So I understand that we have, and I'm recalling now that the federal government is giving us $31 million, I guess, for child care. Apparently, it's what they do, based on some pro rata formula. And so the governor, in neither of his iterations or none of his iterations, offered any child care dollars at all. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Jefferson, not any additional above what's in the base. There is some general funds in the budget. I think there's two main sources of federal funding, if I'm remembering right. There's the child care block grant that does require state match or state maintenance. I think it's a maintenance of effort because it's a block grant. And then there's also some TANF funds that are used for that purpose in that allocation. So there are general funds as well. the 7.5 million last year was an additional general fund amount that's not replicated in this budget.
Last question.
Last question.
Do you recall the TANF and child care block match? What is this? What is the governor's investment or state's investment in those items?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I don't remember the exact amounts of UGF in that allocation. I believe the total funding for that for child care is about $40 million, and about $31 million of that is federal, but I'm not sure exactly the split of the remaining funding.
Thank you. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else have a question for Mr. Painter? I do have a question. I know that when we do the long-term care and we receive Medicaid funding and we do some state funding for that, we have an ombudsman to make sure that that money is being spent well, but also to make sure that the facilities are being ran as they're supposed to be done. What kind of oversight do we provide for child care centers from the state position? Do we put any funding towards that at all?
Chair Johnson, I do not know the specifics on the state oversight of those. I could get back to the committee, but I don't have that information on hand.
So you're not aware of any money that we put towards oversight?
I'm not aware of it. That doesn't mean it doesn't exist, but it's not something I'm aware of.
Thank you, Mr. Painter. Anyone else who would like to speak to conceptual amendment number one? All right, we have Representative Klum and wrap up.
So in wrap up, a couple of questions. One is, I don't think I apologize if I said that the federal money caused the child care centers to close. I do not believe that. I think the situation in COVID was unique, and so was an attempt to keep them open. What I think what happened is that because there were less children, that they were, you know, obviously had less revenue. And so the attempt from the feds was for them to pay their people wages, even though they didn't have the money for that. But that is not always what happened. In the child care centers that I went to, most of them opened pretty fast after COVID too, and they did have kids. Wasn't a full center, but there was many after a short time of closing down totally, they did open their doors, and so they were still taking care of the children. But I think the big pots of money that were coming in, whether it's a lack of business acumen, maybe there was something else going on they had to spend the money on, whatever the reason, they did not generally just pay for wages for people they didn't need. And so those are tough business decisions in those environments. I do agree with the one-time funding. It's not something you can depend on. But like was said before, the Child Care Task Force did recommend subsidized wages. I and my and the one other member expressed our problem with that, and I did not vote for that recommendation, but the majority did vote for it. So I think there's a lot of issues when you, as a business, start relying on subsidized wages for UGF to help pay your people. I think there's other ways to solve that problem, and so that's the approach I take on the Child Care Task Force.
Representative Cronk, do you maintain your objection?
No.
Any other objection? Conceptual amendment number one has to amendment number 59 has passed without objection. And that brings us back to amendment number 59 as amended. We have further comment on amendment number 59, Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you.
I'd like to make note that Representative Fields has joined us.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So clearly, and certainly will of the majority of the body here to add $7.5 million in for this item. I'm just curious, what are we taking it out of? right? How are we going to pay for that, right? So since we probably don't want to have that conversation, I will have that conversation. So I would like to move conceptual amendment 2, which decks $7.5 million out of the PFD and puts it into the general fund to pay for this line item.
All right. Motion has been made. Do we have an objection?
Object.
Object.
All right. Representative Stapp, would you like to speak to your amendment?
Sure. So again, if we want to spend money, and some of the things we're going to spend money on, certainly valid, certainly have good utility, we should probably tell people where we're going to get the money to spend $7.5 million, right? And if that's the will of the committee, then that's the will of the committee. But I think you should probably at least be up and up on folks that in the event that we keep adding more spending items to this budget, we will have to take the money from somewhere in order to balance the budget. And what we will do is we will take the money out of the PFD. So we should have that discussion, I think, because I think it's a good discussion to have.
Thank you, Representative Stapp. Representative Klum.
I have the same approach to the budget. That's why I had a $44 million decrement at the beginning of this process to reduce department operations. I reduced $6 million in one subcommittee to try to reduce the department operations, and I'm not getting support for that. I don't agree that it comes out of the PFD. I think it should be coming from a shift from certain areas to areas we want to prioritize. That's what I've always, how I've approached my subcommittees. It's how I approach everything. Maybe I need to revisit that amendment after this is all said and done, because you're right, we're adding to the budget. In my opinion, I'd like to take the money from somewhere else and put it where we think is a priority, which is what I was trying to do when I had my reductions. I have more amendments with more department reductions. We'll see if that flies, but I can only propose what I can propose. If the reductions are not being approved, I can't sit back and just do nothing, because no one will cut department operations. So I don't support the amendment, because my approach is that it should come from the departments.
Madam Co-Chair.
Representative Edgman.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of an amendment like this. I'll just be straight up. The budget process is multiple steps. It's negotiation after negotiation after negotiation. It also involves competing interests, of course. You've got the state operations. You've got the capital needs of the state. You've got other items that are going to come to picture. But to make it straight up, the permanent fund dividend versus child care centers, I think is the wrong way to go about doing our budgeting. I think it's we all act on our values and our priorities. We all want the biggest PFD that we possibly can get, but we all want a balanced budget, and we also want to meet the public services that we're constitutionally required to provide as well. So with that, I'll be a no vote.
Anyone else who would like to speak to the conceptual amendment number 2 to amendment number 59? Representative Ortiz.
Just very briefly, Madam Co-Chair. I will be opposed to the underlying amendment too, because it's a simplistic statement. That money could just as easily not be going into the capital budget expenditures. It could go to a lot of other areas, still to be determined. For us to say at this moment this is a decrement to the PFD is a possibility, but there's a lot of other possibilities out there too. So this is much too simplistic, and no.
All right. Representative Galvin, followed by Representative Tomaszewski.
I look forward to the moment that we can have this discussion in a more broad way, where we're talking about revenue and ensuring that we have a long-term fiscal view as we're coming up with these decisions. I think that we have a lot to do in that area. And otherwise, I concur with Representative Edgman. I think that that's a discussion that's separate and should be had. And I will be a no vote.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson, through the chair. I also will be a no vote on this amendment. But let's be straight. Anything that we add to this budget is basically coming out of the PFD. I mean, we know that. So let's not fool ourselves in thinking otherwise. Unless you have a decrement from somewhere else, or unless you have an appropriation from some other source, this and any other amendments that we pass is coming directly from the PFD, which is why I've voted practically no on every amendment that's come through with an appropriation. That's all. Thank you.
Anyone else that would like to speak to this amendment? So I do want to say that I appreciate Representative Stapp making that statement, because it's transparent and it's probably quite factual. So whether I want it to be that way or not. So for that reason, I'm going to be, I appreciate what Representative Stapp has brought forward. Representative Stapp, would you like to make a wrap up?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So obviously reading the room here, it doesn't seem like a lot of people want to move this amendment. So I'm going to go ahead and withdraw it, because I think I made my point pretty succinctly. I do still think that if we are going to add $7.5 million to the budget, then I would like to see a decrement of $7.5 million in some replace in it. We don't want to take it out of the PFD. I'm certainly interested in what the members of the committee have to say, where they're going to get the $7.5 million from. So I'm going to withdraw conceptual amendment two.
All right. Conceptual amendment two has been withdrawn. Any further amendments? Any further amendments to amendment number 59? All right. I would like to propose conceptual amendment number three. And conceptual amendment number three would be to add intent language to allow to have the department come back to us with a report on child care centers and how the state is providing oversight. As a mother of five children that was a working mother, and I have plenty of experience with child care, I have plenty of experience with schools, and one of the things that I realize and know is how hard it is to find child care. I didn't expect the state to pay for it, but what I did expect was that if something was state funded, that it was there was some state oversight. And so I don't want anybody to be mistaken in thinking that they're putting their child in a facility that's getting state monies, and that means that they have another layer of oversight that would be provided. I think that's important. I know that we do that with our long-term care. We have a number of ombudsmen that pay attention to what's happening in our long-term care facilities, and I think that it's a mistake if we provide funding without providing the oversight that's necessary for our children. So that's very, very important to me, and I would like to make that amendment. Is there an objection? All right, Representative Clone.
Yeah, I think this is a good amendment. I want to clarify. So the child care office, they do two inspections a year. One is scheduled and one unscheduled. So if you're talking about inspecting the child care centers, there is some oversight to keep their licenses and whatever. But I guess my question was, are you looking for more oversight of the funds that they get, or just oversight of the quality of care? Which I support both.
All right, I'll answer that in wrap. Anyone else? All right. Well, I guess care can be a number of things. To me, I could kind of go in and I could kind of assess if a place looked like it wasn't, clean or wasn't safe. That was fairly easy to maybe kind of see. You don't always know that. But the quality of care for me was so important is that who had access to my child and what kind of, people were being hired. Were they people that had any kind you'd go to criminal background to the extreme, but there's all range of people. Sometimes I think one of the things we've talked about at this table, a number of people have brought it up, is that we have a lot of people work in child care facilities that are probably not paid well, and they're not necessarily the people that are trained. And I would like to make sure that if state money is being paid out to a child care facility, that somebody's paying attention to the quality of the people, first of all, whether it's just, you know, from one perspective or another, from safety, whether it's physical safety to mental oversight of no one's mentally abusing my child at the same time. So I didn't really have this prepared, but I think that anyone that has a child, that they've had any kind of child care, knows exactly what I'm talking about. And if they're protective of their child at all, don't know exactly what I'm talking about. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I appreciate the intent of this conceptual amendment. My only question would be, is your vision of this particular amendment, is it the assumption that it will cost some more money to do this kind of inspection that you're talking about, and would this be eating into the $7.5 million that we're putting forward? That's my question.
So the answer to that is, this is intent language asking for the department to give a report back to what oversight they have provided for the monies that has been expended. I don't have a number that's going to reduce this by. I think we put in an intent language as far as requiring a report pretty regularly. So I'm not anticipating taking money out of the child care number to provide the report. I just think it's very important that we make sure that we're paying, that we're letting people know that we're paying attention. Yeah. I guess we're going back for another round.
Okay. No, I like the intent language, but in terms of its efficacy at getting to what we want to get at, we're almost talking about an audit. Right, being able to look at these facilities. If you're looking at, if they're using the $7.5 million in a way that is intended, might it be better to have a legislative budget, not to do an audit, or perhaps the task force is looking at this more closely. But I just wonder, and I support your intent language, but I just wonder as a, as a sort of a respectful counterpoint that maybe we're going to get a report back that's just done by somebody in an office somewhere that doesn't actually go out to all these facilities and really do what we want it to do.
I hear what you're saying. My response to that is this may lead to an audit, actually. The report, or I mean, what I'm saying is people need to be paying attention and giving us, it doesn't have to be an exhaustive report on how the money was spent, but I would like to hear about what the conditions that they see and the things that might come to someone's attention. I didn't come in prepared, but I do know that people that are in this field, we may be surprised with what they come back with, and we may be something we may need to deal with in the future. So if we're going to go to, I mean, my opinion on the child care is a little bit maybe less direct on some of this, but if we're going to do it if we're going to fund it as a state, we should do it right. We shouldn't just be handing out money and letting it just happen. If we need to do an audit, well, then that's where this needs to go. But if we're going to, we need to be thinking about our kids and not just adding money without some kind of accountability. Representative Hannon, last comment, and then we can go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Like the representative from Dillingham, I do not have an objection to the intent language. I think I guess I want to just put on the record that what we were talking about is licensed centers, because those are the only ones that the state has oversight. So private centers, and we sometimes talk and hear language about streamlining the process to get people into being able to operate. And some of those things are background checks, both criminal and civil, of employees, making sure they've had appropriate training. I know that in Haines, a community I used to represent, there is only one licensed child care center, and they've been in a tight spot because of federal grants to assist them with money, and there was, with food, which is a federal grant available to licensed child care centers to make sure that adequate nutrition is provided to a licensed child care center. But there was nobody to come do the on-the-ground inspection. So they were going to be taken out of the eligibility to do nutritional lunch subsidies, which that care center has said has been critical to them being able to stay in business, being able to provide nutritional food at a licensed center. But we've cut back so many of their programming and oversight that there was no one any longer to do the federally required inspections of what food they were serving at the lunch break. I don't think anyone who works in the state oversight of childcare will object. I think they have so much documentation about what they do. But the big difference is when we're talking about licensed programs that have to have health standards, background checks, cleanliness, working sprinklers, and all of that. But I absolutely agree. When we are talking about the state having additional money in it, it is a good thing, and I think it will affirm for us the depth of the issue of what we want and making clear that when we talk about cutting back or making it easier for people to get in there, we don't want to make it so easy that anybody can hang a shingle and just say, I'll take in your children. We want to make sure that kids in licensed child care centers are kindly handled, safely mattered, and that early childhood education is a component of that. With that, I will certainly agree to the intent language of a report back to us.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I see this as a friendly amendment. I think that the work is really about protecting our children and that these are dollars that are being spent on behalf of our children, and to ensure that there's quality control makes perfect sense to me. I will add that I was a child care provider in a home child care business, and I was proud to get that license. And this was in another state in Alaska. They have a child care program office that has oversight currently. But if this leads to more oversight and to an audit, so be it. I think that that is what it should be, and I support ensuring that the programs lift our children and allow for more readiness for kindergarten. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right. There is no objection. So.
Oh, I remove my objection.
Oh, that's right. There wasn't. Thank you. Thank you for removing your objection. That brings us back to conceptual amendment, to the overlying amendment number 59. And I believe we have an objection. Representative Kronk, would you like to maintain your objection to amendment number 59 as amended?
Yes.
Okay.
Madam Co-Chair, could you speak to the...
Yeah. Oh, the changes? Okay. All right. And I believe we still have wrap up on the underlying amendment. I'm sorry, I got a little bit ahead because we should have taken away the objection after wrap up. Wrap up, Representative Galvin, if you would speak to the changes, and so everyone knows what we're voting on.
Yes, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So the current amendment, as it stands amended, is. We're now at $7.5 million in one-time increment, and we have added intent language to hear from the child care grant program, or at least the department, about what is happening with oversight and with this these dollars that are being spent in child care. As I understand it, that's both of the conceptual amendments. Again, this is a first step. We are not adding any more than we had last year. This is a flat, and it is not in the base, so it is not going to be predictable funding. And just to be clear to the public on that, but it does say that we care about child care. It does say that we're going to make an investment, and for that, I'm grateful, and I urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Galvin. Representative Kronk, does that answer your questions? Do you still maintain your objection? Yes. Objection.
I would like to speak on it. Or was that a wrap-up?
That was a wrap-up. All right, Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Ortiz?
Yes.
Representative Colom?
Yes.
Representative Kronk?
No.
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Galvin?
Yes.
Representative Hannon?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
Yes.
Representative Foster?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
Yes.
8 yay, 3 nay.
By a vote of 8 yays and 3 nays, amendment number 59 has passed. And adopted. That brings us to amendment number 60. Representative Josephson.
I will be withdrawing amendment 60.
Amendment number 60 has been withdrawn. That brings us to amendment number 61.
I will be withdrawing amendment 61.
I'm sorry, will you repeat that, please?
I'd like to withdraw amendment 61.
All right, amendment number 61 has been withdrawn. Amendment number 62, Representative Josephson.
Move amendment 62.
Object.
Amendment number 62 has been made. There is an objection, Representative Josephson.
Well, this is somewhat similar to an issue that arose, I think, I'm going to say Thursday of last week, which was about the funding of healthcare benefits for inmates. There is, as I understand it, a $7.5 million hole in the budget relative to that that can be fixed in conference committee. And we learned that Ledge Finance would bring to the attention of the conference committee, remind the conference committee that there's a hole. And that's great. That's a workable system. I offer this amendment because, although I am a supporter of House Bill 89, I bet I co-sponsored House Bill 89. I see that it's scheduled, so Representative Colom should put on her calendar, if she doesn't have it. She has a hearing in Health Social Services on the other side on the 4th, which is in 2 days. It then must go to the other side's Finance Committee. It all sounds perfectly plausible. On the other hand, I don't know how it will be received there. And so this is meant to be a placeholder of sorts to cover the same fiscal note represented by House Bill 89. And I'm not asking for duplication. I've seldom been to a conference committee and not a budget conference committee, but I suspect that in a similar fashion, the fiscal analysts would go to the conferees and say, we've got something double funded. We don't need that. And they would be delighted to hear it and delete one of them. So that's why I offer the amendment.
We have anyone else would like to speak to amendment number 62, Representative Colom?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. So thank you for I guess, watching out for HB 89. I oppose the amendment because the reason why that additional subsidy is in 89 was really a compromise between a lot of different sides. There was a tax exempt, there was the pieces in the department, and there was a subsidy increase. So it was kind of came as a package, and that's, you know, you kind of saw that in the votes on the House floor. We have to work together to solve the issue. One side or the other doesn't get their way. So if we do this, this is just subsidies to families for child care, which is important, and obviously I support it because it's in my bill. I prefer that the Senate chooses whether that is a priority of the state, HB 89, or not, and not separate it out from all the pieces in the bill. And so I think it's important that, like I said, I do have a hearing Thursday. It'll go to Senate Finance, and it's important that they decide whether all those pieces are important or not, or if we're just going to keep just subsidizing child care. So for those reasons, I oppose the amendment.
Representative Staff?
It's another $5.6 million we're going to spend. There's no associated decrement. Just going to throw that out there probably continually going forward. And so that's my objection. So I'll be a no vote.
Thank you, Representative Staff. Anyone else? Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson, through the chair. I'm just curious, what is the total, do you know, you may not know this, what is the total percentage of families who use child care outside the home, who participate in child care outside the home, and of that percentage, how many actually use assistance through the state? Thank you.
Representative Josephson?
Well,
I should ask if anyone else wants to speak to this, because I'll have that answered and wrap up. But no one else has got another comment. We'll let Representative Josephson go ahead and.
I could answer that, Chair. I know I already spoke to it, but I could answer if Josephson.
Representative Josephson, are you comfortable with answering that question, or would you like to have that answered by Representative Plum?
I am comfortable with it's probably in the fiscal year, but I'd be delighted to phone a friend.
Phoning a friend, Representative Plum.
So 6% of the families that could access subsidies actually use it. Not very many kids at all. Part of that is because of, and that's what I tried to address in the child care bill, but part of that is because the families have to pay a copay. The state is not fully funding their child care. They have a copay and the state pays a copay, but because prices have gone up so fast that the state copay has stayed the same, so they have to pay that copay plus the additional amount, if it's over, so let's say the state says it takes $900 a month, the state pays $500, that family has to pay $400. Well, if they pick a child care center that's like $1,200 or $1,300, they have to pay that difference on top of their copay. So it's really reduced the amount of families that actually access the subsidy.
So is that, I think that was a number?
6%.
Yeah, okay.
This one was 7, it's closer.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Representative Josephson, are we ready for wrap up? Anyone else?
Yes. Yes. It comes down to a single sentence, and that is I'm not trying to – I want House Bill 89 to become law. I understand Representative Colon's position about the variety of topics taken up in House Bill 89. I just think that there are variables. I have a bill in the Senate tomorrow. It could be ill received. I don't know. And so this is a gap filler in the event the conferees need it. Thank you.
Right. Thank you, Representative Josephson. Is the objection maintained?
Yes.
All right. Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll?
Representative Colon?
No.
Representative Kronk?
No.
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Galvin?
Yes.
Representative Hannon?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Ortiz?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
Yes.
Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
5 yea, 6 nay.
By a vote of 5 yeas and 6 nays, amendment number 62 has not been adopted. That brings us to amendment number 63, Representative Kronk.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I move Amendment 63.
Object.
For the purpose of discussion.
For purposes of discussion.
For discussion.
Thank you. Through the chair, this is intent language. The wordage is the intent of the legislature that the department raised the $18,500 per project cap for environmental modifications to $40,000 per project, exclusive of shipping costs for remote communities, and extend the project timeline limit from 90 days to 270 days to better reflect the true costs and time challenges of providing environmental modification services in remote rural areas of Alaska. With this, this is an element of the Independent Living Network legislative priorities related to environmental modifications for seniors and people with disabilities who are eligible for Alaska's Medicaid waivers and who may need a wheelchair ramp or other changes in their home to maintain their independence. The current regulations of the program 7AAC 130.300 limit the amount available for home modifications at a level that makes most projects impossible. This intent language is intended to encourage the department to accelerate rewriting the regulations to better reflect the true cost and time challenges of providing EMOD projects in remote rural areas of Alaska.
Very nice. Thank you, Representative Kroc. Next, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you. Question for the sponsor of the amendment. I see that you're raising the cap. If the bill, if the amendment goes forward, do you have any estimate at all as to the potential overall increase if the cap were raised?
Sorry. Oh, go ahead. Well, I guess we'll go ahead and have Representative Kroc answer that question.
Through the chair, I don't have an overall total cost. I just know that this is actually updating, so they actually could get these projects in rural Alaska.
Okay. Thank you. Any other Representative Josephson?
Yes, I'm very happy to see this intent. I have I call them a commercial constituent because I don't think they're my voting constituent. But they made an inquiry about this exact issue, durable medical equipment issue. And I welcome Representative Kronk's working on this. What we've learned so far is it's very complicated because there's all these different codes that a provider can use to pay for it. So I wish him good luck with it, and I appreciate the amendment.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you very much. I too want to echo what we've just heard from Representative Josephson. Thank you, Representative Kronk. I've heard from many, particularly in the Governor's Council on Disabilities, that this is a smart investment because it oftentimes will keep people home who want to be home. They want to live independently. We're giving them the respect and joy of living at home and being independent that they deserve. And it's also, interestingly, an important investment in that when they have these little bits of supports that keeps them from going into other organizations that have very high costs to the state, over $80,000 a month, as opposed to this, which is so far less, not only the EMODs, but also a little bit of help in terms of care. And all of a sudden, we have so many more people at home who are truly long-term Alaskans who deserve to have this kind of life. So thank you very much.
Anyone else? Seeing no further discussion, do you maintain your amendment, Representative Colom?
No, my amendment.
I'm sorry, maintain your objection.
I remove my objection.
All right. So we have any other objections? Very good. Motion number 63 has passed, or amendment number 63 has passed without objection. That brings us to amendment number 64, Representative Kronk.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I am not going to offer Amendment 64 at this time.
All right. Amendment number 64 has been set aside.
Ready.
That brings us to amendment number 65 by Representative Tomaszewski. Representative Tomaszewski?
We have already passed this amendment.
Oh, yeah, we have, definitely. Thank you. Next up, we have amendment number 66. Representative Josephson.
I move amendment 66.
Object.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Would you like to explain your amendment?
Yes. I'm concerned about the increase in citizen-led grand jury requests. I'm reaching for my Constitution. I'm aware that our founders included a provision that speaks to these. There is a case, I believe it's called O'Leary, that I have not yet finished reading. It is the best description of how the Supreme Court, which interprets our laws for us, interprets the meaning of that constitutional provision. But I bring this amendment because I think it's a nod to the fact that this is really happening. And that is, citizens are sometimes legitimately, sometimes I would say conjuring up complaints about the greater world that they've identified. They are bringing those to the grand jury, sometimes under one model that we may have to look at in a bill. They wouldn't even be brought to the district attorney for vetting. Somehow the district attorney would stand by and just watch this happen. But I'm concerned that the governor has in part contributed to a culture that has fomented some of this interest. And the problem is you end up with a case like we saw in the Kenai, and I believe upon information, which is lawyer speak, meaning, you know, it's sort of secondary to me. I wasn't there. Obviously, I'm not allowed to be in a grand jury proceeding. But the concern is that you end up with a months-long investigation, boxes of documents. It's sort of a grand jury run amok. And in the end, we saw a judge who I believe was retired at the time, indicted. The indictment has been tossed. The grand jury, when it issued what's called a true bill, had 11 members. That's illegal, but it did it anyway, because one of the members walked away and just said, I don't know what they said, but the implication was they just weren't going to participate anymore. So I think this is a reduction in funds from the about 500,000 requested. 500, I'd have to check. And the reduction, I think, is because, yeah, there's more work, but the governor and his administration, and I know that's powerful language, but they've contributed to a culture of this sort of thing. And you have to ask, where does this end? I mean, typically, I think what was meant by the founders was that if a grand juror was driving to grand jury and a number of them saw something, let's say they saw toxic releases on their way to the grand jury courtroom for the day's proceedings, and they wondered what this paint was that they kept seeing along the bike trail, they could ask for the Department of Law to investigate what the status of paint releases was and whether our statutes existed to prohibit that and enforce that. They didn't intend to have people just conjure up pell-mell anything that in the outer world, in any area of culture, any discipline, anything that they were critical of. Because in part, that sidetracks regular law enforcement. So that's why I offer this amendment. It's to say, look, we know you've got actual more work. We're going to give you an attorney to work on that. By the way, now I understand this may run counter to what I've said, but I'm told that only 7 of these complaints have been brought. So I handled 800 cases in a year.
Many of them took very little time, but I handled 800 cases in a calendar year. Can an attorney for, very experienced attorney, handle 7 cases and process them? I hope so. This is a decrement down from $502,400 in the original amount. I just think that what's happening is dangerous. It's going to completely distract the department, and we shouldn't encourage the distraction. So I ask for your support.
Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So I have some questions to the maker of the amendment. So I'm struggling to connect the two dots here. So when I have my constitution open, I looked at this Article 1, which is Declaration of Rights. In here it says, the power of grand juries to investigate and make recommendations concerning the public welfare or safety shall never be suspended. Okay, that's what it says. Now, I'm not a lawyer. I don't necessarily know what that means. It seems fairly clear to me. I don't really know what's going down in the Kenai. I know you referenced that earlier. Not even entirely sure I want to know, to be quite honest. But I do know that apparently we give power to grand juries in our Constitution. The department is asking for positions to mitigate whatever it is that's happening. On the other hand, I do like reductions, so I would like to do that. I just don't know. I mean, to me, the Department of Law is asking for this people for a very specific reason. The reasons the member from Anchorage highlighted. But if it is as bad as you say, maybe we should resource the department. I don't know, right? So I'm very torn on this amendment. So that's my kind of half-hearted objection, even though I kind of like the reduction. So that's where I'm at.
Anyone else? Oh, Representative Kronk.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Well, this was out of my subcommittee, obviously, and the Department of Law did come and ask for this. Because, you know, maybe there is an increase in grand juries, but, you know, from my perspective, the grand jury is the voice of the people. Without their voice, who hears them? So this is an option for them to have a voice in times where they think there may be whatever they determine to be corruption or whatever. So, again, the Department of Law came, asked for this. We, as a subcommittee, we approved this, I really actually appreciate Department of Law when they come into subcommittee. I think they're very straightforward. They don't ask for truly more than they need, and so we felt this was a valuable thing to have. So this is why I was there.
Very good, Representative Edgman.
Yeah, I want to speak, and not to counter what the subcommittee chair just said, but to provide my own thoughts that I was planning to provide anyway. Last year, the Department of Law came for us, if I remember right, asking for position to do election fraud, to do criminal investigations, and to do a third item, I can't remember what it was, all in the one position.
Parental rights.
They didn't get the position, as far as I know. They didn't come back for it either. And I am very familiar as a bystander in what happened. I believe it might have been in Homer. Because as a legislator, we were all just deluged with those amendments from the individual. And I actually read a few of them. I think it's reasonable to at least grant some of the requests to the department. But to give them multiple investigators, if there's 7 cases, seems to me to fall in that territory of that ask that they gave to us last year that we denied. They haven't come back for it again. But if, in fact, next year they come back and say, oh, we need a second investigator, because those 7 cases have now quadrupled into 28 cases or whatever it might be, that has merit to me, and I would definitely consider that. So I think I'm going to support the amendment, Madam Co-Chair, and appreciate the opportunity to provide some remarks.
Very good. Representative Tomaszewski.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Johnson, through the chair. I will not be supporting this amendment. I think it's pretty clear in our Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, by defunding the Department of Law, the ability to work with grand juries in whatever capacity, I think goes totally against our Constitution. And this is a reasonable request. Let's not forget that the grand jury
consist of at least 12 citizens, a majority of whom concurring may return an indictment. Grand juries are only returning an indictment in which then a jury of their peers will look at. So this to me just is nothing more than a rewrite of our Constitution and taking away the funding for grand juries. And I will not be supporting this amendment.
All right, Representative Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question to the maker of the motion. Just want to make sure I have this correct. It sounds like these positions were not in the budget last year, the year before, the year before. The governor, however, has added that to his budget this year. Just want to make sure I have that correct. Thank you.
All right, and we'll have that question answered and wrap up. Representative Joseph and Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am going to support the amendment. Representative from Dillingham articulated many of my concerns. We already have our we're not defunding anything from our Constitution. Our Constitution already allows for a grand jury, an investigative grand jury, as opposed to criminal grand juries to happen. One met and produced an indictment that was later dismissed, the Kenai Homer case that's been referred to. I think it's more about the workload. When you said you've had Department of Law, and I've heard them say that on the record, have had 7 inquiries to do this, when we know that many of our Department of Law attorneys have huge caseloads or department legal issues with many, many cases involved. If they're saying we had 7 investigations and we now have inquiries for another 70, then we look at it in the next year and say the demand is there. This one attorney, the request for a paralegal, an administrator, and an attorney to solely do grand juries seems to be built on a premise that their workload will be narrow and confined. And we know that we have Department of Law attorneys who have huge caseloads for prosecution of crime, for support of state agencies in complex legal matters, maybe deed and legal issues with the feds. And so I just don't see it proved up as the demand. Still going forward with, here's an attorney, and now after a year of a dedicated attorney, what's the demand? I think gives us the pathway to say we need to put more money towards it. The constitutional mandate's clear, but we've not had it exercised nor placed a huge demand on the Department of Law. And these are not entry-level jobs. These are very expensive positions. And I want to see the requisite demand for the need to be there before we fully fund sort of a whole new section at the Department of Law to do exclusively grand jury investigations when the demand doesn't seem to be there. It may be there, and that may be what we find in a year from now in the governor's request. So I will be a yes on the amendment.
Anyone else like to speak to Amendment number 66? Right, seeing no additional. Representative Josephson, and yeah. I think there was a couple questions to answer.
Sure. I really need to finish reading O'Leary, but we do know, it says that the grand jury's power to investigate and make recommendations, those are powerful words in themselves. What I'm told is that grand juries want to do more than that. They want to insist that they will bring the indictments they want to bring. So this is going to have to play out in sort of historical way. It says they shall never be suspended. I agree with Representative Tomaszewski that that's pretty clear cut. But we also know that there isn't supposed to be any abridgment or infringement on our right to speak, but we wouldn't tolerate people shouting from the gallery while we're conducting floor sessions. There are always limits to constitutional rights. The other thing is, this is not taking money away from grand juries. It's adding money to grand juries. And it is not defunding, it is funding. So this is a new source of money for the Department of Law. We're the appropriators. And I think, you know, I agree with my colleagues from Dillingham and Juneau. I think we should see if one person, an attorney for, when I left the Department of Law, after just a couple of years, I was an attorney too. So this is a pretty seasoned attorney. So let's see if they can handle the workload. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Josephson. Representative Cronk, do you maintain your objection?
Yes.
All right. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Stapp?
Pass.
Representative Cronk?
No.
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Galvin?
Yes.
Representative Hannon?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Ortiz?
Yes.
Representative Coulomb?
No.
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Edgman?
Yes.
Representative Foster?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
No.
6 yea, 5 nay.
By a vote of 6 yeas and 5 nays, amendment number 66 has been adopted. That brings us to amendment number 67. Representative Josephson.
Yes, I move amendment 67.
Object.
We have an objection. Please tell us about your amendment.
Sure. I've sort of been rather public about my concerns with statehood defense and whether some of it is waste. A topic probably not on the statehood defense list, but I noticed in the press yesterday that we're one of 11 states that wants to challenge the administration's reductions to the school tuition burden, student loans, faced by Alaska citizens. So this is a very litigious administration. And what I'm told by our fiscal analysts, is that effective March 25th, which is a week ago, the unobligated part of carry-forward statehood defense costs, or rather dollars, is $5.198 million. So I guess the $1.5 million that's funded is on top of that. And I see also... and I could copy this for you all. I'd be happy to do that. I should have done it. But their expenses are, if I'm reading this right, they're decreasing. They have, for example, beginning FY24 through FY26, they have $5 million right now. But encumbered is only $127,000 with outstanding expenses of $111,000. So unobligated, this is the crux of the matter, unobligated, for the remainder of this fiscal year and the next two fiscal years is $4.7 million. So they've slowed their spend, I guess, and they want to add $1.5 million to $4.7 million. That's how I read what I have here, and I would ask for support, and I would invite as a friendly amendment, any conceptual amendment, to reduce this figure to something other than a minus $1.5 million.
Yeah, this is a tricky one for me because, you know, I support statehood defense. Alaska is a state that's comprised of two-thirds of federal land. We're still litigating, still trying to understand, still sort of in a defensive posture the ANILCA Act that was passed in 1980, that is, 44 years ago, so we still have a lot of work ahead of us. But on the same hand, we now are embroiled in a subsistence dispute. The Native community is really, I can't speak for everyone, but at least those that I have spoken with, there's a lot of people who are very leery about what this money means, this kind of an appropriation. When the Attorney General was before the committee, several weeks ago, I asked him if there was merit to actually putting some definition to what statehood defense was statutorily sort of designated, and he didn't oppose it. In fact, I thought he agreed with it. So
you know, by putting more money into statehood defense, which on one hand I support, you could also argue, too, that we're forward funding statehood defense when we don't forward fund other services necessarily. Many, and I can't even think of any other service that we forward fund at this point. I'm sure there's something that we do. So this is a tricky one for me, and I just wanted to put those comments forward, and I'll sit back and decide how to vote.
Very good. Representative Staff.
Well, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So I appreciate Co-Chair Edgeman's comments. It is not a tricky amendment for me, right? Really simple. The president of this country, Joe Biden, has hit the state with 56 executive orders, everything banning resource development to draconian measures from the EPA on my town and the interior of Alaska, draconian measures that crush our ability in Fairbanks and the interior to provide basic needs for our families. Since President Biden has been in office, his EPA has banned the use of a heating oil, too. We had to go to Heating Oil 1, which is dramatically more expensive. He's banned, looked to ban the use of Heating Oil 1, so we have to use ultra-sole, low-sulfur diesel. He's looking at shutting down coffee roasters in our town. And this amendment, which the maker forgot to mention, it says this appropriation would be used to challenge federal environmental decisions by the Environmental Protection Agency and other state federal agencies. I want to challenge those rulings. I absolutely want this state to stand up and stop this executive overreach that quite honestly looks to depopulate the interior of Alaska. So I hope we maintain this funding. And I will be a no on the amendment.
Staff, Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. I don't think this needs to be a yes or no on defending our state. I think we all want to defend our state rights to be independent. I don't think this is meant to do that. I do think that what we're looking at is putting less money in our forward spend for lawsuits that we know are likely going to happen to some degree. And the question is, at what point do we say we may not end up spending all of that? And I guess my question is to the maker and perhaps to Mr. Painter is how much have we spent over the year, last couple of years, and do we, in other words, have we spent the amount that was previously allocated, or is that, do we know that this is, are we seeing a slope of increased need, in which case I may look at this vote differently.
We've had a request to have legislative finance come forward and speak to us, a legislative legal perhaps. I don't know. Brief at ease. House Finance back on the record. We've had a request to have Mr. Painter come forward and let us know how much Department of Law has spent on statehood defense in the last year. All right, thank you. All right, thank you. Welcome to House Finance again.
Thank you. For the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division. So actually just got an update as of March 25th. We have appropriated through since FY21 $11.5 million. Right now, about $5.2 million of that remains unobligated. Of the $11.5 million, that includes that there had been $5 million authorized in FY24. So that's only been available for expenditure for a few months. The department has basically planned expenditures that would exceed that, but the 5.2 is the unobligated amount as of March 25th.
Do you have the amount of the planned expenditures? You just said it exceeds it?
Chair Johnson, the planned expenditures, I believe, are about $10.7 million. $10.7 million.
Thank you. Representative Galvin, does that answer the questions that you had?
I believe it does. I just want to make sure I heard you correctly, that as of 3/25, 11.5 has been appropriated, 11.5 million, and 5.2 is unobligated currently. And then you said 10.7, that there's a plan for that, and in which year?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin. So this is the item that this would be reducing is a temporary increment running the next 3 years. So I believe the 10.7 would be the 5.2 plus their plan for the next 3 years based on current cases.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
All right, very good. Representative Galvin, followed by Representative Hannon, followed by Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Mr. Painter, I want to just, so the term planned expenditures, so that would be the Department of Law expects that this case X over the next 3 years amount. So it's not a contract, but it's their estimated costs for the billable hours to a contract attorney representing us on an EPA case on coffee roasters in Fairbanks. Let's assume it's on air quality, something bigger.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, yes. So it's not that they've necessarily signed a contract for all those amounts. They do have $622,000 encumbered, meaning they've already contracted that out. That's included in the $5.2 million is, you know, unencumbered, but that's what they expect to plan or to spend on future or current and future lawsuits.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Hannon, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. With the understanding, Mr. Painter, that litigation is often an ongoing process, and so has there been any attempt by the Department of Law to report on return of investment of these kinds of monies? In other words, this body, we hear a lot of speak about return on investment for other areas where we spend our money. Has there been any attempt to, in their coming forward with these requests, to show how these investments have, quote, paid off for Alaska?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I've seen their analysis of, you know, accomplishments of the funding. I've not seen a return on investment calculation. They may have performed, but I haven't seen it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ortiz. Anyone else? Representative Josephson, would you like to... I'm sorry. Oh, okay. All right. Very good. Okay, so we're finished up with questions for Alexi, but does anyone you would like to make a
thank you,
comment? Ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm going to oppose this amendment, and my fellow representative from Fairbanks has hit a lot of topics there, especially in Fairbanks. I do represent part of Fairbanks, and the fact is that the federal government is making decisions that people can't heat their own homes. That is absolutely ludicrous. And while there's other issues, per se, a frivolous lawsuit happened that wanted to shut down the king trolling season in Southeast Alaska.
that was statehood defense that defended that lawsuit. So while we all live in different areas, and maybe there's things that impact you, I could have just said, well, I live in the interior. I really don't care what happens to trolling, but I really do because that's part of Alaska. So I'm fully supportive of that. We all took an oath to the Constitution of the state of Alaska. While I wish the federal government wasn't in our life, unfortunately, it really is. And we need to make sure that we're defending our ability as a state to defend the rights that we have as a state. In subcommittee, their ask was $2,018,000. We, you know, tried to be a good neighbor and removed, you know, $518,000 out of what was asked, you know, to try to appease everybody. And the department, you know, was okay with that. So in subcommittee, we actually removed, you know, $500,000 out of this current ask. You know, and I look at everything it says is non-controversial. Everything we do is controversial. Every vote we cast is controversial. So everything that statehood defense and maybe the governor wants is not, you know, per se what everybody agrees to. But that's life here. And I do believe in fighting for our rights. We have lots of, you know, access rights with 2477 issues. So I believe in giving us, you know, the state the ability to fight wherever we need to fight, whether we agree or not. And just the fact that, especially like in Fairbanks, where literally you can't heat your home with a wood stove, for goodness sake, where it gets 50 below zero, you're having the government tell you how to live and not do something is totally unacceptable to me. So again, we had a good faith to reduce the asked amount of, you know, just over 2 million to 1.5 million. And so I'm hoping people will oppose this amendment because we did have a good faith effort into trying to make sure that we weren't adding too much, but, you know, accounting for people's disagreements with what the state does. So again, I will oppose this. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right. I just want to make just a brief statement about this. I too will oppose this amendment. And just as a former mayor that got that, when the federal government came in and starts making taking action against any entity, their pockets are very deep, and they go they seem to have no compunction about just really going after places in Alaska. And so I think it's critical that we maintain the funding most of all, so when something does so there's someone keeping a good eye on what's being where Alaska's feeling the pressure at, because once something gets started, it's an incredible amount of money to ever fight back. And so we have to keep a close eye, and we have to keep a good barrier up to those constant attempts to compromise our self-determination. And so it's, I think that for that reason, I will be a no vote on this amendment. And Representative Tomaszewski, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, through the chair. You know, it's part of the state's job to protect the Constitution, defend the Constitution for the people of the state of Alaska, our rights. And when those rights are infringed upon, we have to fight back. And so we need to have that ability to fight for the rights of the people of the state of Alaska. And that's what this is right here. And so I hope the rest of the committee will join me in voting no on this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Tomaszewski. And wrap up, Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So what we've learned is the administration has spent, I guess, $11 million. They have a plan to spend millions more, but they have unencumbered $5.2 million. You know, I never know to what extent, for example, when it comes to clean air in Fairbanks, you have an Environmental Protection Agency, which came into being through Richard Nixon's signature. I thank him for it posthumously. And they have their own set of instructions, which is to enforce the Clean Air Act. I mean, you know, So they don't mean to be malicious. I understand that I've lived in Fairbanks. It's mighty cold, and people need heat. On the question of clean air in Fairbanks, a document I have from a week ago tells me that the big money items that we're spending litigation dollars on are the 40 Mile River Quiet Title, Keokuk River Quiet Title, Mulchetna Family of Rivers Quiet Title, Mendenhall Lake Quiet Title, and formerly used defense sites and other federal site cleanup issues. I always dislike it when whoever is the author doesn't put their name on it. I don't know if this is from our great friends at Ledge Finance or Department of Law directly, but I've seen these lists before. And on the subject of clean air, in the Texas versus EPA case, that sounds like an amicus case to me. So this isn't directly going to help Fairbanks. It might. Challenge to new Clean Air Act rules regarding passenger vehicles and trucks. I don't think that's a Fairbanks issue per se. But the investment has been, in a 2 to 4 year anticipated duration, $94,000. So the state, in case number one, in this long list, not spending a lot on clean air. Case number two, Clean Air Act 111D, presumably Chapter 111D of the Clean Air Act, State Implementation Plan regs, multi-state challenge to new rules taking away discretion from states on how to comply with emission rules and shortening time for compliance. That looks apropos, $94,000. So most of this money is not being spent on Fairbanks' issues. I'm also reminded that we've recently gotten an email from someone called the Alaska Regional Coalition, a consortium of six Alaska Native regional nonprofits, two of which are regional tribes, Tanana Chiefs Conference, Manilik, Kuwerik, Chugach Mute, Inupiat Community of the Arctic Slope, and Central Council Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes. Together, they say they represent 109 communities and approximately 70,000 Alaskans. And they ask for support for the reduction of the statehood defense dollars. So I would have gladly supported a friendly amendment to reduce it and leave more than I'm asking to reduce here. But I do ask for your support all the same for Amendment 67.
All right. Thank you, Representative Josephson. You maintain your objection, Representative Kronk.
Yes.
Very good. That takes us to Madam Secretary. Would you please call the roll?
Representative Kronk?
No.
Representative Colomb?
No.
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Galvin?
Yes.
Representative Hannon?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Ortez?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
Yes.
Representative Foster?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
No.
6 yea, 5 nay.
By a vote of 6 yeas and 5 nays, Amendment number 67 has been adopted.
Madam Chair, I move to rescind action on Amendment 67.
All right, motion is made to rescind. Have an objection? No objection? All right.
I'd like to object we just made a decision on the amendment to help me just, I mean, the maker of the motion, because we have a motion in front of us to rescind, then bring the motion 67 in front of us. It would be nice to know what the intent is, so I would be guided in terms of my.
Yeah, no, I'm my intent's pretty clear. I'd ask the committee to maybe reconsider the action and to the maker from Anchorage. We are at a critical point in Fairbanks that if we lose another round of our meetings with the EPA, we will certainly have to be suing. And I want to make sure that there are available funds budgeted for state and defense in the event that this state has to go to court against the federal government regarding the EPA's regulatory inflammation of our town.
We have a question. Please.
announce back on the record. Representative Stapp.
All right. So I'm going to go ahead and withdraw my request for now, Madam Chair, as we do some research, but I would like to revisit 67 at some point before we leave this Finance Committee. So.
All right. Briefly, please. All right, so we have adopted amendment number 67. That brings us to, and Representative Stapp has withdrawn his motion to reconsider amendment number 67. So that brings us to amendment number 68. Representative Galvin?
Brief at ease.
Yeah.
Amendment number 68, and Representative Galvin, this is your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm withdrawing Amendment 68.
Right, amendment number 68 has been withdrawn. That brings us to Amendment number 69. Offered by Representative Hannon.
I move Amendment 69.
Object.
Representative Hannon, would you please tell us about your amendment?
So, thank you, Madam Chair. Amendment 69 reduces the Department of Natural Resources funding of $365,000. These funds are designated in DNR's budget for legal services of public access assertion and defense section. RS-2477 matters. The Department of Law describes that statehood defense work as working on that, and that it is continued statehood defense efforts across multiple agencies with issues including ongoing support for navigability matters within the Department of Natural Resources. The Department of Law stands ready and willing to use its statehood defense funding to assist DNR this $365,000 decrement doesn't appear necessary. It still leaves $367,000 in the DNR budget to do the DNR side of RS-2477 assertions, but turns and asks that the Department of Law budget for statehood defense be where the rest of that money comes from. So this is a decrement, but I believe that fully leaves the state capable of dealing with the RS-2477 issues, some of it in the DNR budget for DNR-specific kinds of specialties, and calls upon the Department of Law statehood defense funds to do the legal side of it.
Okay. Representative Hannon, do we have further discussion? Amendment number 69. Representative Cronk.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I will oppose this amendment. I'm thinking there might be a misunderstanding here. This funding will not be used to challenge any decision or policy by the EPA. It will not be transferred from DNR to Department of Law. It's going to be utilized for professional services contracts from outside experts such as hydrologists, geomorphologists, and photogrammetrists that are needed to assist in determining navigability and establishing the validity of an RS-2477 right away. Involving these third-party witnesses before litigation is crucial to ensure the success in a courtroom. So, and with that, I mean, this money would affect many things, like the 2477 right-of-ways, which are vital transportation corridors to provide access to natural resources. We have lots of issues along the highway where there's no access. This is, working towards that. And there's numerous other examples. I'm not going to continue reading them of it. This funding is not going to be transferred to the Department of Law. This is funding that is needed by DNR to, work on these 2477 issues.
All right, thank you. Representative Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will be also opposing this amendment. Two things that jumped out at me here. RS-2477s, which I support, and then navigability issues, which always causes great concern because of the possibility of how that might deal with subsistence. So I did reach out to the department, and I had two questions. And my questions were, do you know if any of this funding will be used for opposing subsistence in general? And also, will any of the money be used in its appeal on the case that's dealing with the Kuskokwim River regarding subsistence? And the reply back I got was, the answer to both questions is no. So the intent is to use the funds for 2477s, which I think everyone knows. For me, part of that would be we have the Bering Land Bridge National Park on the Seward Peninsula. Would love to see people be able to access the trail, the grandfather trail that goes to the Serpentine Hot Springs. And so, and just in general, I support 2477s throughout the state. And I think that's what the purpose of these funds are. Again, going back to the subsistence issue, the navigability, what the department wrote back to me is they said that the Kuskokwim River litigation related to the Kitty John line of cases and subsistence issues, those are being led by the Department of Law and the Department of Fish and Game, but not DNR, which is where this money is located. So with that, again, in support of access to our public trails, I will be opposing this amendment and allowing DNR to receive those funds. So thank you.
Thank you, Rep. Brief at ease. House Finance back on the record. I believe we had Representative Foster just speak. Next up, Representative Galvin. Did you have any additional comments? No? Okay. Anyone else who would like to speak to Amendment Number 69? Very good then. Representative Hannon and wrap up.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The issue remains that the Department of Law has funds earmarked to cover expert witnesses for litigation. We, on an annual basis, have requests from the Department of Law to support statehood defense cases. This amendment, this decrement to the budget, would still leave $371,000 in DNR to continue the DNR research as to cases that should go or perhaps will go to litigation. There remains, as we heard from Mr. Painter just a few minutes ago, $5.2 million in unobligated statehood defense monies for litigation, which frequently includes expert witnesses to be hired and participate in the litigation. My concern here is the idea that we continue to just give carte blanche and saying, on a multi-year basis, here's a pile of money to continue the lawsuit. I do not think that this decrement is necessary for the ongoing work on RS-2477. If it turns into a major litigation and the Department of Law comes next year and says, we need another couple million for this specific case, I think that's a different circumstance. But we have $5.2 million in unobligated money to run over the next three fiscal years. And I think that this small decrement in DNR does not derail any of that litigation and is a decrement that our budget can afford and should afford at this point, because we have a lot of money waiting to be used for litigation. So with that, I hope you can support Amendment 69.
Representative Pront, do you maintain your objection?
Yes.
All right, very good. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Colomb?
No. No.
I'm sorry, I need to void the vote here. Okay. Representative Kronk?
No.
Representative Stapp?
No.
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Galvin?
No.
Representative Hannon?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Ortiz?
No.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Two yay, nine nay.
By a vote of two yays and nine nays, Amendment number 69 has not passed, not been adopted. Representative Stout.
May I ask, we recess for lunch?
You may ask.
Yeah.
Thank you, Representative Stapp. We need to move, just keep moving on a little bit, but we will be taking a short break for lunch here in a little bit. Let's next up we have Amendment number 70, Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I move Amendment number 70.
Objection. There's been an objection. Would you like to tell us about the amendment?
Yes, I would. Thank you. This amendment comes around because of how many and how high our supplemental budgets have been year after year. And the one specific area that we've seen coming up often, and I think Representative Hannon had one amendment already about this for emergency services. This is something somewhat similar. It's called fire suppression activity. And over the last few years, the Finance Committee has repeatedly seen high supplemental budget requests seeking to cover the costs of fire suppression activities with the supplemental budget allocation after the expenses incurred, even as in the operating budgets being submitted at the same time for the following fiscal year. The Governor's Office has consistently under budgeted for this allocation. This amendment seeks to right-size Alaska's fire suppression activity by pinning the increment to a 10-year average expense for the budget amounts being directed to these activities. Pinning the increment to our 10-year expenditure for the fire suppression will decrease the size of the supplemental budget request that will be needed the following year. It's responsible budgeting that we're trying to get to, something that's a little closer to what we know is accurate. And this increment is unlikely to be in excess of the amount needed, both due to the fact that the increment reference is pinned to the 10-year average and the years that we have here for that. To be clear, this came from Mr. Painter's presentation, is from FY14 to FY23 actuals. UGF spend for fire suppression. This increment is unlikely to be in excess of the amount needed, both due to the fact that the increment referenced is pinned to the 10-year average rather than, for example, a single previous year total expenditure for fire suppression, and due to anticipated increases in the fire in the boreal, in particular as a result of climate change, which is something our scientists have told us about, told us to anticipate. So more accurately budgeting for our fire suppression activity needs will give us a clearer picture of the overall budget, which is needed as we contemplate additional expenditures elsewhere in the budget. So I will just reference again, this average is $49.3 million is the FY14 to FY23. And the current governor's budget is 14.2. And so this brings it to, with the increment of 35.1 million, that brings us to the average, which is 49.3. I encourage us to support this so that year after year, we'll be a little bit closer and we won't see these surprisingly large supersized supplementals. Thank you.
Representative Edgman.
Yes, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Definitely a lot of merit in this amendment, no question. I think I heard the sponsor say that the 10-year average is something like $49.5 million, but in reality, we don't know what it's going to be because forest fires decide whether they're going to occur on state land where we end up paying for things, or on federal land where we don't pay as much. The federal government basically picks up the tab, as I remember it. And then the costs, whatever they end up being, sort of shift into the next fiscal year into the supplemental budget. But if you stuck to the yearly average for the last 10 years, you would put the full $35 million in. I think the other comment I might make is that, go back to a comment I made many amendments ago about the budget being the process of negotiation and multiple steps involved and this, that, and the other. I think there's concern about this in the other body. I'm not authorized to speak for them, of course, but just given where we're at with our budget, the things we put into it, in addition to the document that came before the committee a few days ago, I'm going to sort of with a nod to the merit of this, not be able to support it at this time. So thank you.
All right, thank you, Representative Edgman. Anyone else? All right, Representative Colom, and then followed by Representative Kronk.
Thank you, Chair. So I had a similar amendment last year, and I withdrew it. When I looked into doing this, I definitely want budget transparency, and it has a lot of merits. One of the issues I was having is that some of these fires are reimbursed from FEMA reimbursements, and if you know FEMA, it takes a year or two. It lags behind us paying for it. So putting the money up front isn't necessarily an advantage to us, because in that time, some of the FEMA money could be in the UGF to help pay for the supplemental. So I think it does have merit, but I think at this time, I'm not going to support it. I think there needs to be looked at how we can better budget it and see how the FEMA funds interact with it as well.
All right. Thank you, Representative Kronk.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. There's definitely merit in this. This really highlights what I've been talking about for 4 years, is our absolute lack of vision for a forestry program where we are not just watching our forests burn up in smoke and spending millions of dollars fighting them. We need to be very proactive on what we're doing. Having this kind of money would be much better invested in a forestry program. A lot of times, a lot of our costs are, we have a fire in the middle of nowhere, but there could be private inholdings or native allotments, and we have to go fight those fires with helicopters and everything we have, versus going out there and actually mitigate that, clear the fire, or mitigate the fire resources around those allotments, so when there's a fire, we are not dumping millions of dollars into protecting a little isolated inholdings that are out in the thing. But not having a forestry program, again, I'm just going to throw it out there. Sweden, $17 billion a year in revenue. Alaska, $1 million. It's like we're afraid to cut trees. There's a renewable resource that could replace our revenue from oil at some point down the line, which would probably be more in my kids' adult lives, way adult lives, than my grandkids' adult lives. But we have to start somewhere. We can't just keep not doing this. And I would rather see this investment, this kind of money, into something like that as we move forward. So I will be opposing this, even though there is merit in this. I would much rather have forestry come back with a supplemental that has detailed cost, real cost. Again, we need to be building our own firefighting crews. Bringing up crews from the lower 48 is very costly, and that money leaves our state. So we're losing out all across in this whole forestry fire issue. And I know we have people there working on that, but again, I just wanted to highlight that. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you, Representative Cronk. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. We all agree that this particular amendment has lots of merit to it. And when we look at, you know, the next year's, the prospects of next year's supplemental, when with the goals of having there be more resources put into our capital budget, with the goal of, you know, trying to put forward a affordable, sustainable PFD, I think that there's a likelihood, if we don't take actions like this, that when we look at the supplemental next year, we will be forced to go into the CBR. Forced to. It's because it's not like we're not going to come up with the obligations that this particular you know, amendment is calling for. We are going to cover our costs for fire suppression activity. So it just seems to me that we're being more prudent. We're being more recognition of what the reality will be into the next year's budgeting cycle. With that said, however, I'm going to offer a conceptual friendly amendment to reduce the amount of general fund appropriation $10 million. So it would make it $25.1 million. With that, I think we could all come to an agreement that we can agree that itself would have merit and would be a step towards a more truthful budgeting and yet not go as high as the original amendment, which was calling for the 35.1. So I offer conceptual amendment number one to reduce the general fund obligation down to $25.1 million.
All right, we have an objection. Representative. Anyone who would like to speak to the conceptual amendment number one? All right. And just an FYI, when we finished up with this amendment, we'll take a lunch break and come back and probably do the amendments that we have moved to the bottom at that time, just an FYI. So, Representative Galvin, I think you're up next.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, and I'll speak quickly to get us to lunch faster. I'll just add to this amendment. I consider this a friendly amendment. I appreciate that we're trying to figure out what's workable to bring us to a more responsible accountant, if you will, accounts of what we know is ahead, and this brings us to 25.1 instead of 35.1, which is, again, is not a one-year, not a five-year, but a 10-year average. So I think we'd be very safe going to 25.1, and if it ends up helping to bring a new firefighting crew development, so be it. I think that if fire suppression is fire suppression, and I support whatever it takes to make that happen. But the main thing is that this I consider a friendly amendment. So thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Galvin. Anyone else? Representative Cronk.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm going to oppose this friendly amendment. Again, I didn't say this because I think my representative from Fairbanks says this enough. This will be a reduction in your PFD, but what also concerns me is we do have a lot there are a lot of needs for some capital projects that I think are probably important to some of our districts. And again, I just just going to oppose it on that basis.
All right. Thank you. Representative Kronk, Representative Staff.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm going to oppose the conceptual amendment and the underlying amendment as well. I do appreciate the maker of the amendment for addressing kind of a thing I've harped on a little bit, I think, at this Finance Committee as far as fire service, as far as accurately budgeting that. I think there's a lot that we can do to, let's call it, true up the fire suppression activity. I think that requires probably a deeper conversation as far as what we're actually spending our resources for. I always like to give shout outs to Norm McDonald. He does an excellent job when he talks to us about this stuff. But I will say to the maker of the conceptual amendment, this is not a new problem. This is a thing that has been going on for many, many, many years. And truing this budget up or solving this issue at this Finance Committee could have certainly been taken care of for the last 6 or 7 years, because this is not the first year it has been under budgeted. I will say that the current amount of money in the budget for fire service reflects the lowest year we have on record in the last decade, so it is probably not super accurate to anticipate that. I would certainly love to kind of work on the problem, although I will say it probably requires a more holistic solution than just kind of adding placeholder money in anticipation of spend. So that's all I have.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to speak in favor of both the conceptual amendment and the underlying amendment. And I remember vividly when OMB came before us at the beginning with their first supplemental and said $91 million for last year's fire season, when we knew it was a very cold summer and a low season for Alaska. When we talk about truing up the budget, in my mind, when we're working on an annual budget is one thing, but when we want to talk about a long-term fiscal plan, we need to think about the budget year after year, year over year. And I think it's responsible of us to put in there an average spend for things that we know we're always going to need to pay the bills for. Moving to that, I think, is important so that if we want to talk about a spending cap, we can be there. I appreciate the comments from the member of Dillingham that there may be a strategy that maybe the other body and leaving room for negotiation are there. But as a member of this body and this committee, when we continue to talk about having a long-term vision and making our being able to pay our bills, I know that that doesn't mean just the fiscal year we're working on, but multiple years and supplementals. And I would like to see us put more money into something that we know we are always going to have to pay. Even if we invest in developing a bigger forest products industry, we are still going to have forest fire response. Even though many years the feds, and I think it's almost a three-year lag to get the feds squared up with the state on how much we spend in a year, but we need to make sure for our long-term planning that we are building an annual budget that works over the long term, and that means putting in for things that we are annually always going to have to pay for. So I'm going to support the conceptual amendment and the underlying amendment, and I think it's the responsible thing to do. I'd urge your support.
All right. Anyone else? I just want to make one last statement before wrap up. Department of Forestry Fire Division is in Palmer. So just trying to get money into my district, I would say I would want to vote in favor of this. But what I do also understand is that fire is one of those things that sometimes it's a big year, sometimes it's not. And we're better off knowing what that number is before we appropriate the money to it. Because if we appropriate the money to the department, it will get spent. And whether it gets spent on fire or somewhere else, we don't know. But money that gets appropriated gets spent. So for that reason, I will be a no vote on the conceptual amendment as well as the underlying. And in wrap-up, Representative Galvin.
I am not the amendment to the amendment. Sorry.
Excuse me, underlying the amendment to the amendment is Representative Rotez. And, would you like to wrap up? All right, we have an objection on the underlying amendment. Representative Kroc, do you maintain your objection? All right, Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll on the conceptual amendment to amendment number 70?
Representative Galvin.
Yes.
Representative Hannon.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Ortez.
Yes.
Representative Colom.
No.
Representative Kronk.
No.
Representative Stapp.
No.
Representative Tomaszewski.
No.
Representative Edgman.
No.
Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Johnson.
No.
4 yea, 7 nay.
The vote of 4 yeas and 7 nays, the conceptual amendment number 1 to amendment number 70 has not been adopted. That brings us back to the underlying amendment number 70, as presented. Representative Galvin, would you, is there any further comment on question. Representative, on amendment number 70? All right, Representative Galvin.
A call question, Madam Chair.
I'd like to wrap up, if I may.
We'll have a wrap up.
Thank you. Very briefly, I appreciate the...
Briefly, thank you.
Thank you. Very briefly, again, Madam Chair, the one comment I want to make is in looking at the previous 10 years, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of the years, we spent, the actual spend was more than $40 million. More than $40 million. And what I'm asking us to do is true up a bit. I'm no accountant. I'm no CPA. But I've learned quite a bit, and the one thing we need to do is better true up what we're doing. In terms of how many years we've spent $14.2 million, that would be what is currently in the budget. Bet you're all wondering, and I'll tell you, there was 1 year out of the last 10 years. So I just that's food for thought for all of us, and I know we try to be as responsible as we can in this room to make decisions that will help us plan for our future. And frankly, I still stand by this amendment. We may go nowhere, but I sure hope that we all vote on it. And I appreciate the process and being able to offer the amendment. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Representative Galvin. Representative Kronk, you maintain your objection.
Yes.
Thank you, Representative Kronk. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Ortez.
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Yes.
Representative Hannon.
Yes.
Representative Galvin.
Yes.
Representative Tomaszewski.
No.
Representative Stapp.
No.
Representative Kronk.
No.
Representative Colom.
No.
Representative Edgman.
No.
Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Johnson.
No.
4 yea, 7 nay.
By a vote of 4 yeas and 7 nays, amendment number 70 has not been adopted. And at this time, my intention is to take a break and come back at 1:30. Let's go ahead and we're going to take an at-ease. I'll just take it at ease, and we may have another meeting or come back, but we'll be ready to be back at 1:30. At ease. I call this meeting to order. Let the record reflect that it is Tuesday, April 2nd at 1:56 p.m. We are starting a new meeting. Representative Josephson is with us, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Representative Stapp, Representative Plum, Representative Ortiz, Representative Kronk, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Foster. And our LIO moderator today is Emily Mesh, and our committee secretary is Bree Wiley. This afternoon, we continue with amendments to the operating mental health budgets. At this time, I would like to take up the amendments that we rolled yesterday. And first off, we have amendment number 22. Representative Ortiz, do we have a motion?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I move amendment number 22.
We do have an objection. Would you like to tell us about your amendment, Representative Ortiz?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Amendment number 22 addresses one of our main pillars in our Alaskan economy. Currently, the seafood industry employs 48,000 people. It annually brings in $1.8 billion in labor income. 17,000 Alaskans from more than 140 communities are employed in the seafood industry, with a $6 billion total economic impact to Alaskans annually. Currently, different from previous years, well, at least the final budget forms in previous years, currently there's nothing in the operating or capital budgets by means of general fund support for the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. In the previous years, there has been. So this ASME amendment is in support of the industry overall. It calls for a $10 million spend of UGF to support marketing of Alaskan seafood products. According to a recent study, 54% of consumers are eating more seafood compared to 2 years ago. And seeing the Alaska seafood label makes 82% of consumers more likely to purchase Alaskan seafood. This is an example, concrete example, of where we're getting return on our investment towards ASME. ASME has worked hard over the years to build that Alaskan seafood brand, not only nationally, but internationally as well, protects more internationally than nationally. However, with the recent closure of the loophole that allowed Russian seafood to come to America by means of China, there's a stockpile of Russian fish on the shelves, but there's a great opportunity here to fill that future demand. Other countries with seafood industries like Norway, Chile, see this opportunity too and have upped their marketing in our own country. We just have to continue to compete and provide the resources to ASME to compete against what will soon be much greater foreign competition for the U.S. market. So after speaking with the ASME director, you know, he says that that's really the direction that they're going to go. Now, with the recent international developments, with our inability in the future to get as much seafood into China as we've had in the past, we're going to be looking to develop the U.S. market more fully in a time when it's going to be more competitive from other nations competing in that market as well. So this particular amendment is an amendment in support of our economy. It's a support of one of our main pillars of the economy. And it's towards an organization that has shown time and time again that they get a return on the investment, that they've done a good job of building that brand across the world. And now it's going to be more of a focus on trying to establish that brand even more solidly within the United States. And I think this particular amendment has great merit. It's an amendment that, again, is in support of our economy. It's in support of our fishing industry. Our fishing industry is the largest private employer in the state of Alaska. They've had a recent tough year this last year with the actions taking place by the country of Russia. This would not only be in support of, you know, marketing, but it would be in support of the fishermen themselves, giving them more opportunity to market the product that they're catching. So I ask for your support.
All right. Thank you, Representative Ortiz. Anyone else would like to speak to amendment number 22? Briefities. We have had our introduction of Amendment Number 22 by Representative Ortiz and moved. There was an objection. And do we have Representative Tomaszewski is up? Is there comments, Representative Tomaszewski?
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. Through the chair. So this is a. Services line to the support. To support Alaska Seafood Marketing. And they happened to give me a brochure in my mailbox, which was really good. And I was amazed to find out that there was 2.7 billion pounds of Alaska pollock harvested in 2022. That just seems like a really large number. Do you know... what the total export volume, the total export value in billions of dollars is from the state of Alaska?
I couldn't give you that. I would imagine it would be in that handout that's right before you.
It is three billion.
Okay. Thank you. It's
a lot of fish. Yeah. I'll feed the world.
Representative Stapp, followed by Representative Cohen.
So, $10 million, what does that do to ASME's efficacy? I am not sure. Their current budget's around $22 million on average per year. This would be literally a 50% increase in the available amount of money. I went through and I looked at some of the graphs on OMB as far as visibility, product line, different types of placement and marketing campaigns. So according to the OMB website, most of their marketing initiative have increased their visibility when we've spent more money on outreach. It doesn't seem like it's increased actual sales of Alaska seafood products. I don't think ASME has ever come to House Finance to give a presentation since I've been on the committee. So I think it'd be great to hear from them so we can have those conversations in depth. I don't think I'm going to support the amendment, mainly because my understanding of the seafood issue is really just product dumping, right? So Alaska seafood sales are decreasing not because of market visibility, but because Russia has flooded our market with cheap seafood and consumers buy goods that are cheap, right? So I'm hoping that the Fed's taking action against that, let's call it dumping behavior, will kind of reverse the market trends. But I don't know if – I'm just not sold on the value of the $10 million currently, so that's why.
All right. Representative Clum.
I was wondering if Mr. Painter could come up and answer a question.
Well, certainly. Representative Clum would like to have Mr. Painter come to talk fish before us. Yeah.
Thank you for coming up. So I was hoping that maybe you could just clarify. I thought there was funds in the budget. If you can give me, can you tell me what happened last year and what's happening this year as far as there any funding for them? In the budget, operating, or capital?
For the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division. If I could have a brief of these so I can just get the number back.
we have an answer.
Thank you. For the record, Alexa Painter, Legislative Finance Division. Through the chair, Representative Coulombe, there's approximately $16 million of statutory designated program receipt authority. That's from the assessment that seafood harvesters pay. And then last year, there was an additional $5 million of UGF support. That was an OTI, a one-time item, so that's not in this year's budget.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Representative Stout.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So I have a question for Director Painter. What's the variability in those designated receipts? I mean, is that depending on the price per pound of the seafood that's caught in a tax, or how does that actually work?
Through the chair, Representative Stout, I believe it is an assessment on value. They do have a carry-forward revenue that they can use to smooth that volatility somewhat. I think as of the beginning of FY24, they had about $10 million to carry forward that they can use to smooth that volatility. But again, they can only spend that SCPR up to their authority. So they wouldn't be able to spend more than the $16 million. But if they have a downturn in receipts, they can potentially draw on their carry forward, but temporarily if that's a longer downturn.
So follow up, Madam Co-Chair.
Follow it.
So if I understand what you said correctly, they basically have $10 million cash on hand, but they're blocked because of their receipt authority doesn't allow them to dip into that money unless they go below their $16 million in authority, and therefore they can use their cash balance to kind of smooth out the peaks. Is that my understanding?
Through the chair, yes. So they can use it to fill a gap if their receipts fall short, but they can't overspend their authority.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Representative Hannon, did you have a question? Do we want to keep we're going to make you a representative before you get out here. we do have a question for you.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Mr. Painter, how often have we given ASME GF subsidies and supports, if you've looked back at a few years?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, can't say the number of times, but we gave them some federal flexible coronavirus funds and then some UGF. And they had a more stable UGF subsidy prior to budget reductions, 8 years ago or so, and then that went away as we cut a lot of UGF. So over the past few years, I think it's at least two or three times if you count the federal flexible funds that we gave them 1 year. But I don't want to commit exactly how many.
All right, very good.
And may I ask one question?
Yes, Representative Ortiz.
Mr. Painter, I think I heard you correctly in saying that the majority of the funding, the vast majority of the funding that ASME gets is from the industry itself, correct? In other words, through their assessment of their own self-assessment.
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, yes, that's correct.
All right. Representative Edgman, yep.
Just to speak in favor of the amendments, the tally come up a little bit short, I'm definitely going to continue advocating for, an amendment similar to this throughout the process. So we're very clear about that. I represent a district that is very commercial fisheries oriented, and, those billions of pounds that were just being talked about during an at ease, a lot of that's in the whitefish industry, pollock and other sort of groundfish species, but certainly a lot of it is redfish, salmon, and a number of other species that really are the backbone of the coastal economy. But if you think about this $10 million, what it actually purchases, it purchases keeping the Alaska brand alive on an international stage. Representative Hannon, I think, can speak much more to this than I, because she has first-hand experience. But at the last ASME trade show, I think it was in Barcelona. Did I get that right?
Southern Spain,
some quaint little town. But ASME, this sort of the sole umbrella marketer for Alaskan seafood, their display spot, the case was pretty small in comparison to all these other countries that put a lot of money, like Norway and Chile and farm salmon producers and what have you. But for every dollar that goes into market Alaska salmon, it's a dollar that goes into also market the transportation sector. That's very important here in Alaska, whether it's maritime-based or aviation or even trucking. The supply chain sort of beneficiaries of the seafood industry is beyond, you know, the mere sort of multiplier effect of other industries. So I think this is a very reasonable investment. And, in terms of being able to quantify it in an ROI, return on investment type of a scenario, I'll leave that to ASME to come forth and delineate. But I think that I'll just stop there. I think it's a good amendment, and I hope we get the support for it. Thanks.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you. I have a question for Mr. Painter, and then I have one comment. The question is related to tax revenue that we get from fishing. Do you have a sense of what that it has been, and is there some consistency there?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, I don't recall the numbers offhand of the recent revenue, although as the economist who did this 10 years ago, I don't remember the numbers now. It has dipped in the last few years. The revenue sources book has an assumption that we'll have a three-year recovery in salmon or in seafood tax revenue, but it has dipped substantially in the last couple of years.
And real quickly, Madam Chair, if I might add, some of that tax revenue is shared back with the communities, so I'm not sure the revenues sources book really touches upon that, but there's a significant amount that goes to Kodiak and Alaska, Sand Point, Dillingham, Naknek, the Bristol Bay Borough, Petersburg, all throughout the coast.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that clarity. And my comment is that I know that the state where we have revenue coming in, whether it's tourism, oil and gas, mining, et cetera, the state has found ways to help boost that revenue. And I know that this current crisis with not just Russia and the shenanigans going on there, but also the movement of the fish. And there's had to be a lot of adjustments. We've had the commercial fisheries who are, I guess what comes to mind is the many corporations like Peter Pan and others who have adjusted what they're doing. And I think as much as we can, if this is correct, that wild is preferred 4-1, if we can get ourselves out there more, it may help balance so that we can get more of the tax revenue. And so with that in mind, I will be very supportive of this amendment because I think the ROI is there, and I think that we need to help our fishing communities. Thank you.
Anyone else? Wait just a moment here. I think we're finished up there. Representative Painter, I'm going to just rename you there. Okay. Representative Hannon, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. I'm going to speak in favor of the amendment. It should surprise no one. When we talk about it, fisheries is an industry that is a taxpayer in Alaska. Virtually all fishermen are paying a tax. If you're a corporation like Peter Pan or Icicle, you're paying that corporate tax, but we have fish taxes that fishermen are paying that is shared with their communities. So in addition to being the largest private sector employer in the state, they have a reach through our economy and a ripple effect. The bulk of ASME's budget has always been a self-assessment tax on the price of delivered fish at first delivery. And the reason that their price is going to go down is because of the marketing, or the price collapse. Some of it having to do with foreign, but I think early on, Representative Kronk mentioned earlier in a hearing of why did it go down if we had this really high volume, because it's the price value at delivery. Some could argue that ASME has been the biggest marketer of Alaska for the last 40 years. Long before we were helping our tourism industry, ASME was out there, when you're selling a fish brand, you're not just selling that salmon tastes good, you're selling that clean ecosystem and the pictures of the mountains and come to Alaska and fish for yourself. Kind of one of the jokes is one of their best-selling placement of TV ads is all those reality Alaska shows. You can put an ASME marketing ad on one of those shows when the Alaska Troopers is running and know that everyone there is already akin to that label. So it helps Alaska in a variety of ways in the economy. And what we know economically is they're going to be really hard-pressed because of the price collapses from international marketing and the price collapse over the next 3 years dealing with inventory. And the communities that will suffer will be the smallest, because that's where in an economic retrenching happens. You're going to shut down your most remote plants, fewer places are going to